助けてほしいかナナミ。
心を燃やせ。限界を超えろ。
Hello and welcome to More Than Headlines, your weekly anime news podcast powered by Audio Technica, made by Australians for global citizens. I'm your extremely humble host, Brendan White, aka the Salt and Pepper Senpai. And joining me in the studio, my trusted co-host and rival, the Myriad to my Isaac, Mrs. Courtney Smith. How the bloody hell are you?
I am so good, Brendan. This weekend, I went through a metal detector.
Okay, I need some context for this because this is worrying signs. Last week we learned that you're a big dirty liar and now you're potentially serving time in jail overnight. I don't know. Like, what's happening here?
No, I went to the Sydney Royal Easter Show and they have metal detectors at the gate and I was like going through the entrance and I heard it go wee 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 wee. I was like, what the heck is that? And it was some guy who had like keys or something in his pocket. But yeah, and then I got to go through it, but it didn't do anything.
No, so, where's for
no,
you?
No, where. Ah. But yeah, how are you?
I'm doing good. Like, it does really put things into perspective in this day and age that you need metal detectors at the Royal Easter Show. Like, I get it. There's some sick sons of bitches out there that do bad things. Don't get me wrong. But it's crazy that you're just there to try and go on some rides, see some animals, and just live your best life, and you've got to get security screened. But that's 2025, everybody.
Yeah, well, I don't go on the rides because I get really motion sick really quickly, but I have been waiting a whole year to do Patter Chick, which is where they have like a whole, like a barn section with chicks and chickens, all their poultry and all their birds and eggs. And last year I wanted to do Patter Chick because I love chickens but they were closed. We just missed it because they close at 4 o'clock because the chickens have to go to bed, obviously.
Only so many pats they can handle before they get tired, right?
Yeah. So then this year I was like, guys, we have to go to Patter Chick. I want a Patter Chick. And we went there first thing and it was the best experience of my life.
So you patted many a chick?
I patted two okay. chick.
Okay.
Two chick were pat.
Quality, not quantity, I guess, you know.
Yes,
did you take the time to sort of survey the scene and work out which was the two standout chicks that were worth a pat?
Well, no, they had little stations, basically. So I had to go to my designated chick station.
It's like speed dating for chickens. It's ridiculous.
But I went and they really liked my nails because they're shiny. So they enjoyed my nails. And then when I went to the goat padding section, they had some chicks in like a little corner behind some netting wire. And I put my finger in, but they weren't paying attention. So I started going beep, 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 beep. And then they all ran over. It was so cute.
Oh my God, I'm podcasting with the chick whisperer over here.
Like, yeah.
This is so good. If you can use your chick whispering abilities to, whisper a chick my way, get what I'm saying, that would be fantastic.
I'll do my best.
Thank you my little favorite menace. But no, that sounds like a good time. I haven't been to the Royal Easter Show in many, many moons, but I did enjoy it. I think my favorite thing with those types of shows and carny events, the animals and the petting zoos are always cute, but I just love the obnoxious tasty treats you can get from all the carnies. Like, they're like, you know what, can we deep fry this? You're goddamn right we can. Would you like it with a copious amount of cream and whatever else? You're damn right you do. And it's just so ridiculous, but it's a good time.
Okay, do you want to hear what I ate?
Yes, please.
I know we're very off topic, but so at the Easter show, I had 2 cups of lemonade. I normally get more, but it wasn't a very hot day yesterday, so I didn't have to drink too much, but 2 cups of lemonade. I had an egg and bacon roll, which was really yummy. I had a funnel cake, but it was Dubai chocolate funnel cake.
Ooh.
It was like drizzled in like pistachio and chocolate and Nutella with ice cream and cream. It was so good. My friend got a tanghulu, which is a Chinese fruit stick covered in sugar. We had, God, what else do we have? We had a Dagwood dog. My other friend got a cheese on a stick. And then I ate so many snacks.
It's the best part of these things. And I love that. Can you fry it and can you put it on a stick? They're the two questions that you don't walk away curious about any time after you've gone to any type of show or exhibition, because you'll see a lot of things fried and a lot of things on sticks, and it makes the world a better place.
I truly wholeheartedly agree with you.
Yeah, and I'm happy that you did the tried and true, the family classic, the Dagwood dog. Like, it is still probably the goat carny snack. Like, it is so simple, but my God, it's delicious.
So good. Though it was really hot and it burnt the roof of my mouth.
Oh, no.
But it was worth it. It was so worth it, Brendan.
Yeah. Yeah, see, that's a scar that you can carry with you forever now. Anytime you sort of feel that sort of burn mark on the roof of your mouth, I think, oh, I remember that time at the Royal Easter Show when I was, you know, whistling to chicks and eating Dagwood dogs. Like, a simple, better time.
But I'm 30.
Nothing wrong with that. You can reminisce on this in your 40s, your 50s, your 60s and beyond. So,
Thank you.
Yeah, shout out to Dagwood dogs. What are the goat snacks? What are the goat snacks, in my opinion?
Truly. Yeah.
Anyway, I guess we should do what we're meant to be doing here, right, and talk anime. Sorry to the listeners that are just going, will you guys just shut the F up and talk about the animes? Yes, never. We will not. This is our platform, but we love you and thank you for sticking on by. But let's jump into the news headlines where we're going to be unpacking the biggest pieces of news that y'all need to know about out there. Presented by our friends over at Iced Tea Aesthetics, where anime meets streetwear. Go cop their hot new Elden Ring drop immediately. While you're there, be sure to use code SakuraSociety5, that is the number 5 at checkout, to save yourself some cold, hard cashish. But let's get this going.
You like the news?
Oh, yeah.
Guys, we did it. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 7, Steel Ball Run, is getting an anime adaptation. It was announced at the JoJo Day fan event in Japan last Saturday. Praise the anime gods.
Praise the anime gods indeed. And like, truth be told, I have not read a lick of JoJo's. My only JoJo's consumption has been on the screen. Still great, still very thankful for it. But I thought I'd drop the synopses for Steel Ball Run in here for anyone out there that has no idea what we're talking about, no idea what is in store. So here it goes. In the Wild West, riders from across the globe compete in a legendary race. Johnny Joestar, a former jockey who was paralyzed, witnesses a mysterious power during a duel involving Gyro Zappelli and briefly regains the ability to walk. Good on him. Intrigued and desperate to uncover the secret, Johnny joins Gyro in the bizarre and epic race across America. So this is fantastic. I think it's set in like 1889 or 1890 or something like that. So we've got a nice throwback from a time period. It's going to be zany. It's going to be quirky. It's going to be full of hot, attractive characters, and it's going to be a good time.
This is honestly the best piece of anime news that we've had all year, in my opinion. I am a huge JoJo's Bizarre Adventure fan. I can't wait. Though I am an anime only, and part 4 at the moment is my favorite so far. I did try to read Steel Ball Run when it was first publishing, but I can't really get around Araki's art style in the manga. Like, it's quite messy, and for me it just is a bit of a struggle, so I prefer to watch the anime. But also, I love cowboys and anything Western themed. So I think this is going to be right up my alley. And I think that part 7 has the ability to overtake part 5 part 4 in my favorites list.
Yeah, I know you are always thirsting for cowboys in that Western world. So it feels like a match made in heaven for you here, Courtney. And something else that just sounds like a goddamn good match. Science Saru is making his own version of Ghost in the Shell. A trailer was released this past weekend with a teaser visual confirming that the anime will debut in 2026. Oh boy, I'm in.
This is just another huge piece of good news. So after the red hot run of Dandadan, I think everyone's really eagerly awaiting for more of Science Saru's fantastic work and animation. The fact that this next work is an adaptation of one of the most revered IP in anime history means that Science Saru have their work cut out for them, but I honestly have no doubt that they'll stick the landing. I'm super excited.
You and me both. I feel this is going to be a goddamn humper, Courtney. It looks very true in look and tone to the original manga, which I am here for. And something that Science Saru are very good at as far as sort of taking that original source material and being very respectful and true to it when they translate it to screen. So I think this is going to be great. And knowing that it's coming out sometime next year, like, bravo to Science Saru for not only juggling, you know, 2 seasons of Dandadan within the span of 12 months, but also Ghost in the Shell coming as well. Like, yeah, hat tip to everyone working there, and I'm very excited to see this realized when it comes to screen sometime next year.
But in some not so great news, the beginning after the end author Turtle Me took to Reddit last week to address the dire state of the novel turned webcomic turned anime. In a long post in the beginning after the end subreddit, Turtle Me stated, as the author of The Beginning After the End, one who has spent 10 years writing almost 2 million words of this story, I hope you'll believe me when I say that I want nothing but for the best, but the best for this story. Whatever feelings you have for the anime, I'm thankful for all the people behind the scenes who have given me this opportunity, and I'm thankful for all of you for helping me make this happen in the first place. You've stuck through T-Bait at its highs and lows, and so I ask for your support now. Please continue being the rock that gave T-Bait the time and chance to be where it is today. I'm not asking you to like something you don't, but please be respectful and set an example in the vast ocean that is the internet.
Yeah, so I'm going to be completely honest. Obviously, I've been singing this story's praises for the last several months once I sort of took a plunge into the written version of this with the webcomic. Adore it, love it. But yes, it has been a very rocky start for The Beginning After the End when it comes to the anime adaptation by ACAT. And I'm right here with Turtle Me, as this adaptation has not set the world on fire, only the internet, because yes, the internet is very outspoken and love to burn things down, justifiably or unjustifiably. I think it's more of the former than the latter in this case, if I'm being honest, because it has been a pretty rough watch up until this point, and it feels like it's falling more in line with this endless sea of fantasy and isekai we get every season. But because it's got such a prestigious name attached to it, like The Beginning After the End, it is under a bit more of a particular microscope, I guess you could say, where it's getting judged a little more harshly, but fairly as well, because I will admit the first few episodes have been very mid, very forgettable. The animation hasn't been that fantastic. But I will say that episode 3, I feel it was a step in the right direction. We get a lot of exposition and some scenes and some backstory that ties into Arthur and Sylvia in these scenes. Really good. I thought the animation was a step in the right direction, and I'm hoping that the next 21 episodes we will see continued improvement, but I'm trying to heavily temper my expectations because, you know, this was just about my most anticipated of the spring season, and it has fallen pretty flat on its face so far, Courtney.
I will say, and I think maybe it's important that anime fans do kind of call out when an anime is bad, especially something as hyped as The Beginning After the End, because we know that there's an issue currently in the anime industry of studios just churning out so much content that A, fans can't watch it all, and B, the quality just severely dips. And we already know that the industry is rife with people being overworked, mistreated. And so I think it's probably a good thing, honestly, that there is a lot of backlash against the anime at the moment. I'm hoping it encourages ACAT and maybe even the industry as a whole to really take a step back and think, you know, what went wrong here? Why did it go wrong? Are we overworking people? Are we understaffed? What the hell is happening? Because this just isn't going to help them at all. And I think this, seeing that the anime has done this, has encouraged me to consider reading the original novel or the webcomic. But you can't really disrespect someone's work like this, you know, as a studio, as people producing anime. The author, Turtle Me, has obviously put like their blood, sweat and tears into this, and to then turn it into an adaptation that frankly sucks is really, really disrespectful. So I'm glad I gave it a miss. I saw that it immediately flopped, decided to skip it. Things sound like they're getting worse, not better, at least in terms of like online discourse. I think the author's brave for speaking out, but silly for not just admitting that it's kind of crap, and hopefully another adaptation can come out later on that does it better.
I hope either this does get corrected from a course perspective and ACAT somehow redeem this. I have my doubts that that's going to happen. I do wonder, like, it is tough because he's had no say or control in as far as the product getting created, and a lot of that would have come down to the contract that he signed. So there's probably a bit of, I don't want to say naivety, but maybe like more of a a good gesture where ACAT have said all the right things and he sort of believed all that and just went along for the ride. So maybe if there was a little bit more control and power back for Turtle Me, it could have been a different story. And yeah, it's pretty messy. Like, we're not even, what, 1/6 of the way through this season so far. And like I said, I feel there could be potential for course correction here, but I also feel this is just going to fall right into that same bucket as the other million fantasy and isekai we talk about every other season here. And it's a shame because, yeah, the story is so good. Like, I read the latest chapter that dropped overnight this morning and was so bittersweet after watching the third episode last night, where I'm like, oh, this is getting better, to reading the webcomic and going, holy shit, this is so good and it's gorgeous and I'm loving it. So I feel like I'm living two lives here, Courtney, and it sucks.
It's brutal, but I think in a way it's good. I think that such a revered series getting a big flop anime adaptation is probably a good thing in the long run, because it will hopefully get people to step back and have a look at the state of the industry, which we know is, you know, in rapid decline.
I like your optimism, but I don't know if this is going to make a single ounce of change, because you see even the big heavy hitter studios laying eggs these days, and the internet will get it riled up and upset about it for a hot minute, but then we move on to the next thing. And I feel this is just a cleft note for this season, and we'll find something else to grieve and complain about come summer season in a couple of months.
Very true. But let's get into some rapid fire news presented by Otaku Box, the only anime box with scale figures, voting, and ecchi. Our one and only piece of rapid fire news today is that Diablo Immortal is doing a collab with Berserk.
I was excited for a minute because I didn't see the Immortal word attached to this, and big Diablo fan, I've sort of been jumping in and out periodically with Diablo 4 as the new seasons jump out. And I'm like, what? Do I get to play as Guts or Cusca or someone like that in Diablo? Like, are we getting the crossover of all crossovers here? And then it was like, nah, it's for Diablo Immortal. I'm like, fuck, I am not touching this. But I love to see more mainstream global brands collaborating with, you know, anime IP like this. So I see some positive in it, but I ain't touching this.
But Brendan, don't you guys have phones?
I do, but I still like to use my phone as a phone, Courtney. I don't really play many games on my phone at all.
That, honestly, when they announced Diablo Immortal, I was so disappointed. Diablo Immortal is the game that got me to get my own gaming PC back in, oh, not Diablo Immortal, Diablo 3, sorry, back in 2013, and I never looked back, and now I play League of Legends. Anyway. Let's talk about what we've been watching this week. I only want to shout out to you because you're also covering quite a few of the ones I want to talk about. I just want to start by saying this season has been fantastic so far. All the stuff that's good has been amazing. Sorry, amaze, to use your
appreciate tier you. List. Thank you. Yep. Thank you.
I want to say To Be Hero X episode 2, I am eating this up. It's good soup. It is so fucking good. It's so well paced, beautifully animated, fantastic music, great characters. I am obsessed. Nice and Moon go their separate ways in this episode, but not without some people discovering Nice's secret. It looks like we'll have an old villain coming back in episode 3-2, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I got to say that To Be Hero X is so far above like 99% of the anime out there. And I don't even think that's like being dramatic. I think it's pretty damn accurate from a stylization standpoint, I'm talking, because the production quality and the amount of money that's getting funneled into this story, I'm terrified to know how much money this anime is taking to create, because everything is stunning. And like Courtney said, everything is done at just such a high standard. It is ridiculous, but I'm loving it. I really enjoyed the scenes this episode between Nice and Moon where they're under house arrest and sort of seeing them peel back the superhero layers and just be real with one another. I thought it was really nice. A lot of quieter moments. It did dial up at the end with sort of how the episode sort of finished up and a little bit of a cliffhanger, like you said, with the reintroduction of a character from episode 1 that we thought we saw the last of. So it's exciting to see a little bit more focus at the very end on what's to come with some of the villains that we'll sort of get some exposure with. But also want to shout out the OP for To Be Hero X is right up there. Like, where, like, you were talking about eating well and like sort of bowls full of like anime based soup here. Like, the OP itself is a meal. Like, it is such a catchy tune. And then you tie it in with sort of this genre tone jumping animation style that they sort of pivot between. It is so good.
I will say, I am so glad that you and everyone in the Discord encouraged me to pick this up, because I think it's probably in my top three for this season so far at episode two. And yeah, I'm so keen to see what else they put in front of me. But the other show I wanted to shout out is Aharon-san season two. We had episode two come out this week. The first 5 minutes of this episode is just Animal Crossing New Horizons. like let me copy your homework, bro vibes. It's slightly off. It's you know, we've got a little Tom Nook guy, we've got a house, we've got a tent, and then after we have this whole Animal Crossing segment, which goes for 5 minutes. I need to be really, really clear that
they were committed to the bit, Courtney.
It's
and
a
I loved
whole it. 5 minute segment. Then suddenly he's Kiryu Kazuma from Like a Dragon, and he's walking around with Tom Nook around Kabukicho in Japan as like a gangster mafia type guy, Yakuza. Truly just amazing stuff from this series. It never disappoints. It's so funny. Doesn't take itself too seriously, which is why I think I love it so much.
Yeah, it knows exactly what it's setting out to achieve, and it sticks within its lane, and it's crazy and zany and whimsical. But then it'll sort of surprise you with a lot of heart and a lot of honesty and raw emotion. Like, it is a really, really fun, enjoyable blend, and it's bubbling away. Like, it's sitting in my top 10 for the season so far. Like, I only know we're a couple of episodes in, but I am vibing it. I'm always leaving the sort of end credits with a smile on my face, because it's just wholesome and funny. And like you said, it's never taking yourself too seriously, like I am most of the time. So I feel I can loosely relate to this world. It's a good time.
Just really great. Like, being able to watch this every week makes me so happy. But what have you been watching, Brendan?
Yeah, so I've got a couple that I'll sort of skim over in a little bit of a lighter context, and then one that I wanted to deeper dive in because I watched the entire gamut as far as the epic story that was told there. But Witch Watch, episode two, so goddamn fun, this series. So goddamn fun, these characters in this world. Like, who would have thought that in this second episode we'd get references to Hunter x Hunter, Demon Slayer, Dragon Ball, and Attack on Titan, all in the same episode, all in the span of like 5-10 minutes. Like, the sort of fan servicing when it's like in regards to like name dropping and getting those cheap pops is not forced at all. Like, it just works. So the comedic timing, again, love it. Seeing Nico come out to her classmates in this episode and be like, yo, I'm Nico, I'm a witch, because of a couple of failed spells she tries to cast during sort of their introduction in the homeroom. Hilarious. But I did especially want to shout out the sus guy who, like, once they all get familiar with Nico as the witch, he sort of asks her one thing at the start of the episode and then asks her another at the end. And the first thing he asks, he's like, oh, you're a witch, so can you turn me into a chair? I'm like, you ain't fooling no one, brother. I know what you're trying to do here, you little perv. But then at the end of the episode, he asks her if she can switch his left and right eyes. And it's just like, who writes this nonsense? But it is so fun. It is so adorable. And it is so insane. And the fact that we've got all this comedy tied in with like sense of community and friendship and belonging, and then some sprinkling of like, will they, won't they, from a romance side. Like, again, like on the thematic themes here we've got with Eaton, like, this is another tasty, delightful meal. Like, this is a wholesome home-cooked meal that like sticks to your sides and you just feel happy afterwards. I'm loving Witch Watch.
I also am loving Witch Watch. Nico is so cute.
She's the best.
Like, her little face, and she just loves Morihito so much. It's amazing. Her be like watching him fuck around with the eraser on the mechanical pencil and just like her inner monologue of him, like, moment by moment, she's like, oh, he's broken it, oh, but he's so cute. And she's like, all right, I'm gonna help him out. And she's like, okay, if I put my whole hand on an object, it makes it big with embiggen. But if I just point at a part of an object, only that part gets big. And she points, but points at his head instead. And his head is giant. And I lost it. I was like, this is so funny. Mm-hmm. But the fact as well, which something I found really clever, was that they set up that the teacher is a big nerd as well. She's like, yeah, I'm your teacher. My hobby is mambo. I love dancing the mambo. Da, da, da. And they're like, good. Okay, she's weird. And then all of the references, she's picking up on every single one, which is so great. The fact that they set it up so well, I was very, very impressed.
Yeah, it's so good. It's one of my favorites. Like, it's sitting in my top five for the season because it's just pure fun, pure enjoyment from opening credit to end credit. And that OP by Yosobi, it is a toe tapper. I love it. A couple other little random thoughts, not going to dive too much, but I genuinely have no idea how they're going to get a full season out of Please Put Them On Takamine-san. Like, watch the latest few episodes. I'm like, how are we going to get a story out of this? Like, I get it. It is pervy. It's fan servicey. It's lowbrow, but I don't know where it's going to go. I'm curious. I'm going to keep watching for reasons, but I'm going to hold my restraint. It is tumbling. It is like near the bottom of my watch list. It's sort of on the cusp of, like, I've dropped a few and it is sort of hanging on by its, you know, time traveling panties with every sort of ounce of strength in that fiber. And the last one to shout out, Courtney, Lazarus is so goddamn mid and it is being majorly outdone by the thing I'll talk about in a second. But man, it is, I think it's the most disappointing of the season. Like, I know at the beginning after the end, we sort of were hesitant due to the studio attached to it, but I had a lot of optimism. But when you've got Watanabe, you know, sci-fi goat coming back for the first time in a long time, you think this is gonna, like, he's gonna cook. He's burnt everything. The kitchen's on fire. This anime kind of sucks.
Episode one of Lazarus, I loved. I know everyone else was like, it's kind of mid. I was like, no, I see the potential. I see where it could go. And I'm excited for where it could go. Like, I love this idea of there's this miracle drug. It's making everyone feel better, healing them, curing what ails them. And then 3 years later, it's like, oh, actually, it's going to kill you all now. Bye. That is a really cool premise. And I was very excited. And then episode two dropped and I could not stay awake. I was like, this is so boring. Just nothing happened. Nothing happened. The animation went downhill. The first episode's animation was pretty good, but episode two, nah. Just nothing exciting. But what's it being outdone by?
Yeah, so if we're going to talk sort of sci-fi jaunts, it is getting lapped by Moonrise. Netflix exclusive, done by Wit Studio. All 18 episodes are available right now. And you can be like me and just binge the absolute bejesus out of it over the span of one day. Sci-fi sleeper hit of the season? You're goddamn right it is. It feels great. It looks great. The character designs are done by Fullmetal Alchemist creator Hiromu Arakawa. So there are several moments when I'm watching this and I couldn't help but feel that we've got, like, the Fullmetal Alchemist offshoot in space. And I mean that in the most, like, respectful, positive way possible. It's got a story that contains a set of brothers, in parentheses, robotic arms, magic via way of engrave technology. And this engrave technology, the concept of it is sick, Courtney. Like, what it is this technology that can infinitely reshape objects as long as the mass is the same. So you see these things come out and they turn it into guns and into swords and into rifles and into other types of devices. So you're sort of seeing all this magic play out with this cool sort of future space tech that Earth has created. We've got corrupt governments and we've got a girl that looks and acts a lot like Winry from Fullmetal Alchemist. So there is a lot of, like, nods to the past from that FMA world. But again, it doesn't take away from this world. I feel Moonrise, it nails the animation, the score, the background art, the mechanical design, and the fight choreography, especially when doing sort of these zero gravity battles in space. Like, oh my goodness, Courtney, it is so good. Which studio, I feel, knocked that out of the park? The story and the plot, which is focused on the conflict between Earth and the moon, is great sometimes good. Like the plot can get a little convoluted as big epic grand sci-fi can tend to do. But overall, I enjoyed it. Really good conclusion. Potentially opens itself up for a second season with the way things sort of end, which, you know, I wouldn't be sad if we get more of that. But right now for me, Courtney, sitting in the amazed tier, and it's sitting at number 6 in my seasonal rankings because I had a great time. This is polished up the wazoo.
So I have heard so much about Moonrise and not all of it has been good. I've heard you sing its praises. I've heard a few other people in the Sakura Society Discord sing its praises. But everyone outside of that has been telling me how bad it is. And I'm like, maybe I give it a miss. I don't love space sci-fi. I'm not a huge fan. Like, I love future sci-fi, but I don't love when it's set in space. Mm-hmm. So I think this one is a bit of a miss for me just because I can't be sure that I'm going to love it. And 18 episodes is a lot when I'm, you know, trying to keep up with the season. But I'm glad that, you know, you enjoyed it and other people enjoyed it. And I'll leave it at that.
That's cool. I'm curious, like, and we don't need to sort of go too deep, but I want to know, like, what the things are that people have said are bad. Because, like, the biggest sort of weak point for me at times was the pacing or the story, where they did do some flashbacks to give you more exposition and understanding. So some of the timing was a little off, but once they sort of really hit their straps, I thought it was great.
Well, apparently that's the biggest thing, is the story is really bad, according to my sources. And that it's so bad that it really detracts from everything else that's good about the anime. And for me, I think knowing that, even just having that knowledge, makes me A, not want to watch it. So B, if I did watch it, I would already be quite judgmental of it with that prior knowledge.
Okay. Yeah. Like, I'd say everything minus the story is great. The story is more so good that dances with great sometimes, but just the way they've sort of decided to chuck in where they do a flashback or where they sort of pull you back to current day, there was a few times where, and part of it was my fault too, because I was dicking around on my phone or whatever, so I'd be like, hang on, let me just skip back 20 seconds here to understand what's happened. So part of it's on me, but yeah, the pacing is probably the weakest point of it, but yeah, it's really good, man. I'm a fan.
I'm glad you like it.
Thank you. And something else I like, Courtney, that I've started reading the last couple of days, and I have become very quickly invested in this manhwa. I am up to chapter 45, I think, after the span of 2 or 3 days. It's called Revenge of the Iron-Blooded Swordhound, and it's written by I Stepped on a Lego. I love all these, like, alias sort of stealthy pen names that people take up, especially in the manhwa world. Like, you know, we mentioned Turtle Me earlier. And yeah, the writer of this, I Stepped on a Lego. And that's such a descriptive, immediate attachment as far as the name, because everyone knows what that feels like, knows it's not a good time. But on the contrast of that, Revenge of the Iron-Blooded Swordhound is a very good time. Illustrated by Lee Sanchez, it's a resurrection revenge story about Vakia, the loyal hunting dog of the Baskerville family who was betrayed and met the guillotine. So we see him sort of flashback to sort of, I guess, his birth, and he's going to try and redo it as he seeks vengeance on the master that he so, like, loyally and blindly followed throughout sort of the 40 years of his life before he obviously lost his head. Gorgeously illustrated, really cool story, really cool pacing, really cool choreo when it comes to the fights. We're seeing, like, he's a, you know, a sword master, but we see, you know, there's people that have magical abilities in this world, monsters and stuff. But it's scratching a very familiar itch that I'm getting used to sort of dealing with over the last few months, but I'm vibing with it. I think it's 117-ish chapters at the moment. It's ongoing, so I'll be able to sort of live and learn this story as we go along. But yeah, I'm about just under halfway as far as catching up to where this thing's at. But I'm loving it, Courtney. Good little read.
Okay. Seeing you really get into manhwa and things like that is, honestly, that's what got me into it more as well. And it's always good to see what you're reading, because I know that in, like, a year's time, they're going to be like, we're doing an anime adaptation of this. And I'm like, yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, I feel I've got, like, a good, I wouldn't say sixth sense, like, I've got a good nose to sniff out some of these ones that are ripe for an adaptation. I feel this could be one, because it's really cool, super stylized, and the tone is everything that I'm vibing. I think after this, I'm probably going to pivot and try to find something, a little slice of life, your romance-y. I need some long-form love in my life, whether it be in written form, in hopefully real life form. But yeah, I'm going to sort of check out some other stuff I've got on the short list from the Kodansha nominees from the other day that I'm going to sort of start diving into as well. But
nice.
That's what I've been watching and doing. Shall we do what we always do here and cover our anime in focus for the season, which obviously is Kowloon Generic Romance. We're up to episode 2. Shall we jump in?
Let's do it.
All right. Episode 2 kicks off with Reiko staring at this mysterious photo she found on Kudo's desk. You all know the one. And there's this flicker of recognition on her face, like she's seen it somewhere before, but she can't quite place it. The show's already starting to play with that slippery line between memory and reality, which I'm really vibing about. And you can really start to feel Reiko starting to doubt and question her own story. We then get a call from her friend about a noise complaint at one of the apartments she manages. She then goes and checks it out. We then meet Yame. She's a little strange. Nothing wrong with that. A little quiet. Can all appreciate that. Something about her feels a little out of sync, though, with everyone else. And it adds to this whole something's not right with this city vibe, which I am just eating up at this point, you know, 2 episodes in, Courtney. The two women end up sitting down and having tea together, and they start discussing the photo. And Yaomei encourages Reiko in this moment to not be too worried about having memories, as she's had work done on her entire body. And you're like,
I really liked this opening segment here because it was really focused on the two women and how in this society, how women are perceived, first of all. And it seems like they're almost being targeted as the kind of victims of these, you know, experiments or whatever's happening in Kowloon. But we then get a flashback from Kudo's perspective where he meets and hangs out with Kujirai. She says they'll always have lunch at Tintin Eatery, and she admires the golden plumpness of the dumplings in the broth. So this old Kujirai is also a fan of smoking and having watermelon at the same time. And we actually are getting to see what she was like, the old her was like, and why Kudo says and does the things that he does, why he acts in certain ways, why he insists on always going to Tintin Eatery for lunch, why he, you know, mentions her earrings and her glasses and things like that. And this theme of love and nostalgia comes up again. And we notice when they're on the roof together in this flashback, they look up at the sky and there's no monolith looming over them. We've, for this whole time, all of episode 1 and episode 2, we've had this huge monolith in the sky. It's really ominous. But in this flashback, there isn't one. So Kujirai and Yaome get lemon chicken, and Yaome says that Kudo is, her theory, I guess, is that he's waiting for her memory to come back and for the old her to come back as well.
Yeah, which is very, very intriguing and super duper mega interesting. Like, I'm so engrossed in this world. I've got so many like red strings running around my head, mentally connecting things to here and there. Like, I'm so hyped. And the next day, we see Reiko or Kujirai, as Courtney's mentioned her as, just to avoid any confusion with the naming conventions, obviously first and last name there. So Reiko and Kudo, they get into an argument because he can sense that she's forcing herself to be someone who she isn't. There's a moment where Reiko starts to piece together her past, or maybe someone else's. She learns that an older version of herself, Reiko B, was romantically involved with Kudo, but here's the kicker. This current Reiko is younger than that version. So what exactly is going on here, Courtney? Is she a clone? Is she a backup? A memory construct? The show doesn't say, but it wants you asking these questions like we are right now, out loud, or sometimes internally, as I was watching yesterday. The sense of deja vu, of romance remembered but not lived, it's heartbreaking and eerie all at once. And I personally do not want to experience anything like this in my life ever, as I know my heart won't take it. So Courtney, if I ever somehow end up in this situation, get me out of there quick, smart, please, and thank you.
I will do my best. We live in different cities, but I'll do my best to help you out.
Thank you.
I'll take you out for lemon chicken.
Appreciate you. Yeah. I love lemon chicken. So yeah, let's go.
Yeah, that's good. So then we get a scene where Reiko, Yame, and her friend Shaohei, who did the initial noise complaint, they go to visit Hebinuma Medical Center because they're offering free checkups, which is great in this economy. Yes. The girls see that they're also offering free cosmetic surgery checkups and consultations. And Reiko wants to go to get her crow's feet looked at because, as we know, that's something that she's a bit self-conscious about. Reiko loses her sense of self, though, because she's not grounded by her own memories, right? So she is thinking she keeps getting called out by Kudo for these crow's feet, and she's like, I need to get rid of it. Like, I need to do something. But what we kind of realize here is that this is something that Reiko B, or the old Reiko, is something that makes her. Something that Kudo is pointing out, potentially because it reminds him of the old her. So anyway, her and Kudo, they end up making up and going to get lemon chicken for dinner. They still go to Tintin Eatery for lunch, of course, because that's where they always go. But a few days later, Reiko goes to this cosmetic surgery consult with Dr. Hebinuma, and he tells her some really eerie things that kind of match up with the theory that she may not be who she thinks she is, that she is Reiko B, and she is the girl in the photo, even though she has no memory of it, and that her amnesia is something that has been intentionally inflicted upon her. And he doesn't specifically say that, you know, this in amnesia that you have is intentional, but it's really, really heavily implied.
So much drama and so much goddamn lemon chicken this episode, Courtney. It's ridiculous. What I love here is how the show makes you feel the dissonance. Like, Reiko is walking through a life that feels familiar yet foreign. I think something that, you know, obviously we're not in a sci-fi world like this, but we have these moments in life at times. So there is some relatability there. And as she's piecing things together, you can see her trying to hold on to something real, even if she doesn't quite know what that real is just yet. So the episode ends without giving us clear answers, but I feel that's the magic in this storytelling. We're in a world that might be a simulation. It could be a memory bank or something way more sci-fi that's still yet to reveal itself. Generic terror, the floating sphere above the city. Like, yeah, we didn't get a ton of that in this episode. So there's still just this big, giant, looming, quiet, unsettling observer watching everything play out in Kowloon, which I love. And I've still got questions and intrigue regarding the fact that, yeah, the city's appearance has not yet changed since 1994. Like, that ain't just nostalgia, Courtney. That is very intentional. And for what reason, I do not know. But yeah, episode two turns up the existential heat in a big way. We've got identity crises, mysterious tech companies, fragments of forgotten love, and a city that might be lying to everyone within it. Stick around, because next time we're diving into episode three. And trust me, the questions will only get deeper. If I'm scoring this, this is sitting in the great tier right now.
I actually want to mention, you mentioned that generic terror, and I guess as an expansion of that, we kind of have Hebinuma Pharmaceuticals. So we know we have this company that is doing things, altering people's minds, and it's all a bit shady. But I do want to mention that Yaome, the reason that she was getting the noise complaint from her neighbor is because she was making those generic terror mascots. She was making like hundreds of them or whatever, like sewing them. And that was the noise. And I just wonder how, like, is Yaome connected to generic terror in some way? Like, she says she's not herself. She's had a lot of work done on her whole body. Like, what is happening?
Yeah, I've got so many questions and so much intrigue. And if we all find out they're all just plugged into a giant matrix-like mainframe, it would not surprise me in the slightest. But I love that every episode and every scene, I'm left with more answers, more questions than answers, sorry. And I think it's just really, really, really expertly crafted storytelling. And I hope that it can continue and carry this mystique and mysteriousness and intrigue all the way through to the end credits, because I don't mind if this is like the slowest of slow burns and we wait until the very, like, the 11th hour to get the final payoff. Like, I don't mind if this just slow rolls this thing all the way through and just keeps me on the hook till the very end.
It's so deep. I'm just so obsessed with it. Every week when a new episode is out, I watch it immediately and then I watch it again, because there's so much to pick up in each episode. There's so many just little bits, lines, imagery. It's very, very good.
Yeah, I can't help but harken back to like when I was young and I'd watch like the X-Files and Twin Peaks and stuff. It gives me that same type of nostalgic vibe where I'm just so engrossed, yet so confused, but yet so obsessed. And I just want to know more. And yeah, I cannot wait for episode three.
Yes, but let's get into our final comments. I want to mention, as I did at the beginning of the episode, I went to the Sydney Royal Easter Show, and there was so much dodgy anime merch. Like, when you first walk in, they have this big kind of like a shopping, a general shopping and merch area, and they have like t-shirts and like even Labubu and Gacha collectibles, things like that. And they had this little anime stall, and it's just so much dodgy anime stuff being sold for like $20 a pop. And I'm like, I know you got this from Alibaba for like 10 cents. Do not lie to me.
Was it dodgy to the point where they were like spelt incorrectly to avoid any legalities? Or is it just you could just see it was cheap and nasty stuff, like you said, from the back of the internet truck?
Yeah, it was definitely cheap and nasty, but it had, you know, when they have like a slight discoloration, like Luffy's hat is, you know, a bit more orange than it should be. Things like that, where it's like, you know, that it's not official. Mm-hmm. Even if they try and put it in an official box, I'm like, nah, you're not fooling me.
I wanted to shout out though, you did get on the Birdie Beetle train. That is like a show must. If you get the Birdie Beetle show bag, like you never see Birdie Beetles out in the wild at all apart from a show. And is it still a semi-decent passable chockey?
So I'll actually tell you the story behind why I get Birdie Beetle, because it's actually kind of important to me. We're getting some deep corny lore right now. Okay. But my opa, who passed away maybe back in 2013, he wouldn't go to the Perth Royal Show, but he would always get someone to get him a Birdie Beetle bag. And the chocolates, like, they're not great for sure, but he would always get it. So whenever I go, I always get one just because it's something he did and it reminds me of him. And last year I got the blue bag, which came with 5 Birdie Beetles. This year I got the gold bag, which came with 10.
Ooh.
So I'm living it up.
Yeah, you are stocked up on Birdie Beetles, maybe to next Royal Easter Show. Who knows?
Yeah, potentially. Yeah. But what do you have to shout out in your final comments, Brendan?
I just wanted to say, this is not really a shout out, but more of a statement. Tiffany Stratton better be walking out of WrestleMania tomorrow as champion. Otherwise, I'm going to be pissed, Courtney. I'm going to be so pissed. But also, be sure to enter our colorful stage, the movie Amiku Who Can't Sing giveaway, currently active on our socials, obviously at the Sakura SOC. You can find us on there. We're giving away 2 double passes on there to the movie. Australian entrance only, I'm afraid. We can't sort of chuck some tickets to someone over in America or somewhere abroad. So yeah, limited to Australian residents only, but yeah, super easy to enter, 3 ways to enter. And we'll announce the winner in about a week's time. I think we're announcing it on around the 26th or 27th of April, if I remember correctly. So yeah, get in on that.
And to our new and old listeners, make sure you join our Discord so you can also discuss things like To Be Hero X and Moonrise with us. We're always active, always happy to chat. We also have a Patreon that you can join to find out the latest updates about when we're recording our next episodes. If you are in the top 2 tiers, you can join in the recording sessions as a live audience. We have 2 audience members here today. Thank you guys so much. But you'll also get some sneak peek behind the scenes footage of the things that we talk about before we start recording and after we start recording. It's usually pretty wild. And a big, big, big thank you to our producers, Orny Duffo and Matthew C. Without your support, we would not be here.
Keeping those emotional and literal lights on here in the Segoy studio. But yeah, if you can't afford to fund us on Patreon, that's totally fine. You can do so in other ways, like rating, reviewing, subscribing to us on your podcast platform of choice. 5-star ratings and reviews would be preferred because, yeah, I don't know what's happened, but the system only accepts them these days. So just hit that 5-star and we'll be very thankful. But on those socials, especially on the video front, at the Sakura SOC, subscribe, like, comment on the videos you see on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, trying to make a more conscious effort on those fronts. Shout out to all the fantastic people we got to interview at TGX. Those videos are now out in the wild and are a ton of fun and doing really well. So thank you for everyone that's checked those out. Expect more of those in the future when we get to a few more cons in the coming months. But listeners, viewers, Segoy Squad, and everyone else in between, whether your anime be subbed, dubbed, or still yet to come, enjoy yourself and much love to all the gorgeous waifus and husbandos out there. Goodbye.
Mata ne.